the horn. Go.
And everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's a someplace they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Don't let the Vegas play against. And Vegas has split. That's our framework. That's our MO as a team.
Richardson breaks free on the sideline. End zone.
This is a mauling, folks, a mauling.
Fear the tide, honey badger.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Tommy, Alabama did work on Saturday, and it was a hot day. To quote the Southern Belle, the older Southern Belle at the Watering Hole Saturday night, golly, it was damn hot.
Yeah, man, this is that one game on the schedule, right? That we've been blessed to have a game in Atlanta for the past few years that has been our opener, whereas, you know, this is our home opener kind of deal. And, you know, with a 55-point spread and 100-degree temperatures, definitely not a full house on Saturday.
No, definitely not. I was sitting in the stands in early in the first quarter, and I began questioning my life choices. I didn't go to the game that was in Atlanta against Duke. I decided to watch that one on TV and then went to this game live. And I thought, well, I should have reversed those. I should have gone to the indoor game in Atlanta and then sat this one out, knowing that it was going to be the hot game. But alas, I was there. And yes, it was a scorcher.
Well, man, also the game in Atlanta, you know, that I got to go to, man, you know, they served some adult beverages too at that venue. So I think I scored twice.
Yeah, I think you won on that one. Saturday, I'm telling you, at the game, adult beverages would have been a bad choice. I can't count the number of people that I saw sort of walking up and down the steps, you know, wearing blue jeans and boots. And, you know, carrying like one of those 32-ounce Cokes and like a platter of nachos. And I'm like, you people made different because it is too hot for Cokes and nachos and jeans. But, man, there were a bunch of them.
Oh, my gosh. Well, tell me what jumped out at you. Obviously, it was a quick start to the game. You know, I'm sure Tua wishes it would have been deemed a pass because he could have been over 300 yards. And obviously, this might be the only time Ruggs has one carry for 75 yards and a touchdown in his what's left of his career, right?
Yeah, that's a funky looking stat, right? It wasn't even an end around or sort of pitch. It truly was a pass, and it was all just body placement. If he had been a yard and a half forward, it would have been a pass. So the mechanics of it certainly were a pass. It's just, you know, did it go backwards relative to the quarterback? Quarterback's position, and it did. So it was a run. I think Devonta threw a nice block sort of downfield, and it was off to the races. It was it was literally the first play. So within the first, you know, 10 or 12 seconds, you know, Alabama had established, hey, we have athletes over here that you don't. And of course, you know, Ruggs is one of the faster guys on the team anyway. So it was darn impressive. And again, I think you could see people in the stands like, damn, I knew it was going to be a blowout, but I haven't even sat down yet, and here's the score. So,
as soon as that happened on the first play, I'm sure people were thinking, okay, we might be able to leave by the end of the first quarter here.
That's right. We thought about getting out here early, and we are well on the way.
Well, I will tell you on that play very quickly. You know, Jerry Jeudy, you know, tried to get between the ball carrier and his defender. But Devonta Smith, he was engaged with his guy about 15 yards down the field and proceeded to stay with him for another 10 yards down the field. And obviously all of these wide receivers take a lot of pride in their blocking ability. And they've all made really nice blocks in the past. You know, they play bigger than their size, right? I mean, you'll see Ruggs lay out a guy, and he's 160 pounds. And so just doing the little things, man. I mean, we've said this before about, like, enjoy Saban, because when he's gone, you know, it's going to be like, oh, man, I miss Saban. Well, the fans need to enjoy Jeudy and Ruggs and Devonta Smith, because, you know, you and I in our lifetime might never see, and take nothing away from Waddle, I'm just saying because these three guys are juniors, we might never see an embarrassment of riches like this again in our lifetime, of three guys who play at a high level all the time, do the dirty work, unselfish, don't care if they get the ball. If their teammate scores a touchdown, they're just as excited. I mean, these three guys are just a football head coach's dream.
And any of them could be, and especially in this era where we see sort of the diva prima donna wide receiver, any of these three guys could do that. You know, Devonta obviously caught the touchdown in the national title game. He could wear that on his sleeve. You know, Henry Ruggs, his first five or six catches all went for touchdowns. And Jerry Jeudy is Jerry Jeudy. So any of the three guys could be the diva. And I don't know if they sort of check one another or if that's just their personality. And I think it's more the latter. But the fact that they're each willing to do the dirty work, the unsexy part of the receiver position, and they do it, you know, with enthusiasm and they celebrate one another, that sort of increases the rarity and it certainly increases the fun in watching it as well.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, just what struck me about this game starting out is, you know, it was a good game plan. The first 15 scripted plays, you know, they did a really nice job of getting their players sideline, their playmakers, okay? Their four receivers, or their top four receivers, they did a really nice job at the beginning of the game of creatively getting these guys out in space. And it was so interesting, like, you know, the first play went, you know, the first play, you know, had gone to Ruggs, and then the next play went to Jerry Jeudy, and the next play went to Devonta Smith. Obviously, Tua has his progressions, right? And obviously, he has the ability to you know, survey the field. But I thought it was neat that he got each one of those three guys involved early in the game, and the scripting of the plays and how they got their guys in space to let them be playmakers. I just thought it was a nice start to the game.
Yeah, I do too. I think it was a little bit, you know, especially coming off that initial Ruggs play, I thought it was a little bit of sort of the Lane Kiffin special, right? We're going to spread, you know, east and west so we can attack, you know, north and south. And then, you know, there's a little bit, you know, getting it to multiple receivers instead of, you know, just one guy. And of course, it's a different roster now. And so I got a kick out of that. I was like, well, they definitely, offensively, you know, Sark and Lane definitely sort of grew up together. And so I got a kick out of, you know, seeing some of the transitive properties there.
Oh, absolutely. I also found it interesting that, you know, when you look at the stat line, obviously Waddle had a couple passes he'd like to have back. He did have more looks than the stat line would reflect with his two catches for the day. But, you know, because we lost a Josh Jacobs, right, who and a Damian Harris who were so versatile out of the backfield, you know, a young Brian Robinson, well, not a young Brian Robinson, but, you know, he's in a bigger role this year, right? And even Najee Harris, you know, Najee Harris had one catch on the day and Brian had none. You know, it's nice to have these four guys because you don't have to put too much on these running backs who are tasked with replacing two big playmakers at running back.
Right. Right. No, what? I think that's good. And I like sort of, and we can talk about the offensive line and the blocking, but, you know, I did think it was a little bit ironic that the top three, you know, longest runs of the day were made, you know, obviously one by a wide receiver, one by a quarterback, and one by the third or fourth team running back, you know, Keelan Robinson, depending upon, you know, how he shakes out with some of the other guys. But I got a kick out of, you know, the top three sort of rushing performances, you know, by longest individual run were not made by Najee and Brian. And then, you know, and Brian especially has to be kicking himself because there was a point in the third quarter where he was leading a drive all the way down inside, you know, the 10 or 12, and they rotated at that point. They rotated backs. So Najee came in, and I said, boy, Najee's about to steal Brian's touchdown. And sure enough, next play, you know, Najee ran it in for a touchdown. But I looked at their stats, and so Najee had 12 carries. Robinson had 11, so that's 23 carries. Najee had 68 yards. Brian had, 57. So that's a 125 between them, with the touchdown, averaging about, 5.4 yards. You know, the two of them combined for a stat line for, a Derrick Henry or a workhorse singular running back. I thought that was neat to look at it in that perspective.
Oh, absolutely. And, that's the, Saban's specialty, right, of having the, the two-headed horseman, right? And so it's a situation where Brian Robinson is one of those guys that we talked about that, fans are going to see him this year and be like, who is this? Where did this guy come from? Well, he's just a really good tailback who could have started a lot of other places, and, he just had to wait his turn kind of deal. Talk about the offensive line for me for a minute for the listeners. Obviously, we had a little shuffling of linemen here. Just talk about, you and I talked about the Landon Dickerson, right? And we talked about how the fact that, Saban's ability to bring in a guy like this, that can be a big cog in the wheel, if you would. The fact that he has played both guards and center positions definitely came in handy today. And, while obviously, Chris, it's a shame that Chris Owens was banged up. I think you got a glimpse of where the season's going to end as far as what position Landon's going to be. I think he's going to be your center when it's all said and done.
Yeah, I think so. I think, it was interesting to see him move over in one of the postgame pressers. Saban seemed to get a little agitated at one of the reporters asking about Landon moving over to center. And, Saban said, when your first two guys are banged up, you have to go with a third guy. And I think that was the first reference to Chris Owens, being banged up, that there nothing had come out last week. And so, the part of me wonders, was he banged up enough that he couldn't have played, or was he banged up enough to, hey, let's, we've got more than enough starters. We're still trying to figure out roles. So let's use this as an excuse to get Landon over and get Owens some rest. I don't know the real answer to that question. but it was interesting, and we talked about this, right? Is there an opportunity where we see five, players with experience playing tackle across the line? And that was it. That was the starting line. I'll sort of tease, and no surprise, right? This is not really a surprise, but I have it on really good account that Saban is pissed, not just displeased, but that he is just flat, I'm quoting an unnamed source, that he is pissed off at the performance of the offensive line, that Saban wants to be able to move the line of scrimmage, reestablish the line of scrimmage, create holes, and that he is extremely upset that the offensive line isn't delivering on that. That Saban wants to be able, when you get in a red zone situation. Now, ironically, Alabama inside the 20 went 6 for 6 this on this day with touchdowns. But there were multiple times on third downs where Alabama could not outmaneuver, outposition, outpush, New Mexico State off the line of scrimmage. And so that's something that I think that the team will get better at, because the athletes up there are just incredible. And I think there's confidence within the building that when Deontay comes back, that's going to improve the running game, that he delivers something and maybe his pass blocking isn't as good as some of the other guys, but his run blocking, I think he's one of the better run blockers we have. And when he comes back, I think we're going to see, visible improvement in the running game.
Well, as the color commentator said in the ball game, former, Georgia offensive lineman and, first round draft pick in the NFL, he highlighted the fact that the guard positions was where the push was coming from New Mexico State. And, they shared with the listeners at home that New Mexico State's, first string nose guard was banged up. And they basically kept him from playing in this ball game and saved him for their conference schedule coming up and let him rest. And then they talked about the fact, David, that one of their linebackers was banged up and had a soft cast under one of his gloves. And oh, by the way, this guy who's a senior this year led the nation in tackles last year, averaged 13.2 tackles a ball game. So I say that to you to say if their starting nose tackle would have been in the game and their stud linebacker tackling machine would have been in the game, you know, that would have been a better test for this offensive line, right? To have to get them ready for the SEC schedule that's coming up. But I will tell you that Matt Womack, you know, he needs to seize this opportunity. Right now is his opportunity to, you know, finish his legacy as one of the five starting guys on this line. And right now I think Deontay Brown is going to come back eyeing that left guard position. And I think Landon Dickerson is going to land at center. And so that right guard is up for grabs. And right now, you know, Emil obviously had earned the right to start against Duke and then got pulled, you know, got pulled in that game for Evan Neal. And so, you know, I think it's going to be an Evan Neal, Matt Womack, Emil fight for that other guard position.
Yeah, I agree. And I wouldn't rule out, Chris Owens at the center position. And then that introduces Landon back into the battle at a guard spot, and
which he wins that battle, right? I mean, obviously very quickly, and I guess that's why Matt Womack needs to seize his opportunity, because right this second, that is probably what Coach Saban would prefer, right? Because then he can put his graduate transfer back at guard and put Deontay Brown at the other guard, and if Chris Owens can win the center, well, now that's looking pretty strong.
Yeah, and I think there's a little bit of, and again, you don't make decisions this year necessarily for next year, but I think there's a little money in the bank for Evan Neal, because he likely is the starter at left tackle next year. And so if he can spend this season, just like Alex Leatherwood did, at the left guard position, then he's just stepping over rather than stepping onto the field. And so if it's even, I think Evan would win that. And so I just think that really tightens the screws. Neither of us are calling him out as much as we're just pointing out that
right.
The pressure probably is most on Matt.
Sure.
Because, you know, there's going to be pressure from Brown coming back, and there's going to be pressure if Chris does, in fact, earn the center position back, then Landon's got to land somewhere. And so just like we talked last week about sort of the musical chairs in the secondary, it is a faster place tempo musical chairs across the offensive front, especially the interior positions.
Absolutely. Well, tell me what else jumped out at you on offense before we do our mini game balls.
I thought the slickest drive of the day was obviously the two long runs. But in terms of a drive, I thought Mac Jones put together a really good drive. You know, he was 5 for 9 on the day, but he led a drive, 7 plays, 70 yards in just over 2.5 minutes. And I know it was later in the game. I know the game was well decided, but there was a certain tempo that, and even, you know, there were a couple of incomplete passes, but certainly there were completions and some good runs. And he just, there was a tempo about that drive that looked really crisp. It didn't look disjointed even when he incompleted a pass. They lined back up, ran the play, and they moved the ball down the field pretty aggressively. I mean, of course, we like Tua. He's not gonna outrun Tua necessarily, but I enjoyed just that drive. It looked very crisp at a point in the game where, you know, maybe the defense wasn't looking as crisp, but Mac looked really, really crisp on that drive. And that was nice to see. I enjoyed seeing him put that together and have that success.
Well, obviously, you know, his progression is key, right? Because you never know when it's going to be next man up. And the way Tua likes to hold the ball and float in the pocket there, I mean, you saw early in the game where he had a couple guys at his feet. And looking at the replay a couple times, you know, I'm going to tell you it was strange. It was a strange coincidence how on one play when two guys was at his feet, one of the guys looked like he really was taking his helmet, aiming toward to his right knee. And he just was able to glaze it, and Tua pulled it out quickly. But that particular play, I was surprised that it didn't seem like he slipped. I'll say it that way. It didn't seem like the player slipped, and they were both at his feet. And, you know, it was like, man, that's the last thing we need against New Mexico. You know, obviously any opponent, right? But you know, Mac Jones needs to be ready, because, you know, things can happen.
No, you're absolutely right. And the starters, I think across the board, both sides of the ball, the starters played longer than I expected them to. I surely thought, you know, before half we might take out Tua so Mac could get, you know, the last drive and the first drive coming in and out of half. But we didn't do that. We brought Tua back in at half. And so I was a little bit surprised by that. To your point, you know, and, you know, show our age a little bit, but it was, Brody Croll, you know, broke his knee against, you know, Western Carolina in one of these games. And so, you know, that's real. And so you want to get him out of there when you can. And I think one thing, you know, and I'll kind of hit on Mac, because you made a good point. He needs to have some reps in case something does happen. I think we're going to see two things play out. I think there's two storylines that we're going to see play out at the backup quarterback position. And one is we're going to see Mac Jones get, you know, more time, so that if happens, right, if the negative happens, then we have someone that's not coming out cold. And I think we're going to see that earlier in the season. Then we're going to get to a point where we're going to start to see more Talia, and that will be building for next year, so that he is not flat-footed in the competition against Mac Jones, because I think Talia probably has, you know, more of the upside. So I think we're going to see two things play out. We're going to see Mac Jones get some reps for the sake of this season, and then we're going to see later in the year, you know, maybe some fourth quarters, and I'm surprised we didn't see it this week, but, you know, I think Saban was calling off the dogs and Alabama didn't score in the fourth. It could have been, those dots could connect, but I think we're going to see some Talia get some run, so that he's not fresh to the field, you know, come spring practice when he's dueling it out against Mac. So those will be two storylines to keep an eye on.
No, that's good points. Well, talk to me real quick, because Tua has been known to be allowed to come out, you know, in the first series of the second half in games like this. Talk to me about the fourth and two, as you were sitting in the stands on that opening drive of the second half, where, you know, Tua takes to running. Are you surprised at the 47 of New Mexico State? We went for it on fourth and two, up 38-0. And then, you know, as Tua's running, are you like, oh gosh, I wish you weren't doing that?
Yeah, it was definitely one of those. I kind of had a flashback to the San Jose State game when Julio did the end around. You and I both don't like sort of the franchise guy running the end around, but then he scores the touchdown, and so, well, I'm glad, but then not glad. It was kind of that when you want to be able to make the first down there, obviously, and you're going for the first down, not the touchdown. And so as soon as he got the first, I was like, slide. I just yelled out, slide, go down. And of course he kept running and scoring the touchdown, and that's great, right? You want to see that athleticism. And I think he's dropped a couple of pounds and maybe, you know, looks a little faster, but you know, my first instinct was for him to go down, get the first down, go down. You know, we don't, you know, those are running steps that we don't need you to take against a defense that's trying to bring you to the ground. You know, had they tackled him and had he, you know, and again, it's exciting that he scored a touchdown, so I'm not rooting against that. But at the same time, know who you are in the larger sense. And I don't think anyone would have felt bad if he slid on a 5-yard gain.
No, absolutely. Well, you know,
being like grouchy old man? I mean, I'm okay
with
that.
No. There's bigger things ahead. There's bigger things ahead, and it's just not needed at 30 when you're already up at that point. So I don't, you know, but that's just not in Tua's makeup, right? And you want them to have that, you know, gamesmanship of, you know, just, you know, leaving it all on the field, but. That's something they need to work on. Obviously, he's doing better of, you know, taking what the defense gives him, right, and throwing a couple balls away. I guess he's not doing as good throwing the balls away yet because, you know, he's able to fit a ball in a keyhole. But definitely, you know, hopefully as the season progresses, you'll see him, you know, just take what the defense, you know, I need to get to the chain and then get down. You know, Mac Jones, real quick, just going back to his first series in the third quarter there, I found it interesting that on the seven plays that were called for Mac, that only two were runs, and they let him throw the ball five times. And on those five times, you know, he had three completions to three different receivers. So the fact that he threw it to Jalen and threw it to Devonta and threw it to Judy for the touchdown, you know, that's very telling that when he came in, you know, how many times have we watched the backup quarterback come in and now it's just time to hand the ball off? The fact that he got in and they called his number five of the seven plays is very a good sign for the confidence they have in Mac Jones.
Yeah. And just the intentionality of, you know, we're going to give him some passes under live fire.
Absolutely. Well, anything else before you do game balls?
No, I'm ready for mini game balls.
All right, so I'm going to start. I don't think you're going to take this one. I'm shredding the mini game ball rules again, but I don't really care because it's deserving. Obviously, all three or all four of these receivers are quite good. But I wonder what Devonta Smith does just in the weight room as it relates to hand strengthening exercises, because you didn't get this is one benefit of the TV. Obviously there's lots of benefits in person, but that catch that he made across the middle, you can't even call it shoelaces. You have to call it almost the bottom of his cleat. And literally when he caught that ball and it was straight up, the tip, Dave, the tip was the length of my fingernail from being on the turf. And for him to be running full stride and go down and grab that ball like he did, oh my gosh. That is probably going to go down potentially as the catch of the year on the team. I mean, obviously we'll see, but just that catch was phenomenal. It was jaw dropping phenomenal.
It really, yeah. You know, Devonta's, and yeah, you know, sometimes last year at times I thought it was Ruggs. So far this season, I think it's, you know, Devonta's a little bit maybe underrated relative to some of the other guys, but you know, and it's hard to say that he's one of the better ones because they're all so good and so tightly grouped. But, you know, he deserves that type of top billing. And I'll say this because, you know, we all know Devonta's a little slighter relative to the other guys. But I saw him after the game and walking out, you know, and looked like he was with family. And you know, he wasn't in, you know, gear. He was just wearing a T-shirt and shorts. And you could tell the guy had packed on some muscle. This was a... You know, he was a strong, solid dude. Looked like he was packing, you know, car parts, and so that's just a testament to not, you know, obviously you were talking specifically to hand strength, but it speaks to, you know, the workout, the conditioning, the effort, and really, you know, when they say built by Bama, I mean there's a little bit of, you know, advertising in that, but there's a little bit of, you know, these guys truly are, you know, built up within a program, within a process. To have some success, and the more natural ability they bring to that coming in, obviously the higher they can go. But Devonta, I think he is on that treadmill, and I think, you know, we've seen some great things from him, but I think, you know, some of his best work is yet to come.
Absolutely. Well, give me your mini game ball.
Yeah, I am going. You know, in a day where there wasn't, you know, maybe a singular event that sort of turned the outcome of the game. I'm going sort of deep and sentimental, if you will, with my mini game ball. Admittedly, I didn't go back and look at last year's stat line. Giles Amos is a former walk-on tight end. I believe he's seen action in games before, but I believe Saturday he had his first pass reception. So it was a little five-yarder. And it wasn't much to speak of, but it was exciting to see him on the field making a couple blocks and certainly you know, certainly catching a pass. So that was great to see. So I'm going Giles Amos as my mini game ball.
Sounds good, man. Well, let's flip the field. What jumped out at you on defense? I guess before I ask you that, let me prompt you to get your thoughts. What did you think about the starting 11 when they took the field? What did you know? Obviously, you have a really good view of this when you're in the stands. You know, when they first came on the field, what did you think about the makeup of who started the game on the defensive side of the ball?
Yeah, that was definitely the first thing that caught my eye. I started sort of doing a double check on some of the numbers. You expect, you know, who you're going to see and what numbers you're going to see, and you start seeing different numbers, you know, come out on defense, especially the secondary. And I always try to count the backs and the DBs. And so, you know, we're rolling out in a dime against a team that, you know, passes the ball 70% of the time. And I start seeing, wait a second, these are different numbers than I'm expecting to see right now. And so we started with, Maiden stepped in at the star. Patrick Surtain moved in for Job. So Job was out. Shark Carter in the dime didn't start. But we saw freshman Jordan Battle and Daniel Wright, I think he's a redshirt sophomore, with injury last year, stepping in play. And so that's two guys that were in that were a little bit of a surprise. I would have, you know, we saw dime last week with, certainly Job at one of the corner spots and Shy Carter in with Maiden. And so it's a little bit of a Rubik's Cube when someone comes in, you know, we don't always he comes in for another guy and it's sort of a one-on-one transaction. When sort of guys move around, it becomes, you know, sort of a multiple. And what I had heard, or what I have heard, and again, I hate to say sources, but maybe this is sourced a little bit, is that the intent was to bring Maiden in at the star, not necessarily to take Job out at the corner. But what you do when you bring Maiden in and give him run at the star, then, you know, Patrick Surtain, if you do a one-for-one transaction, then Surtain goes out. But you're not going to take him out, right? He's one of the best back there. And so he's going to slide back over to corner. So that takes Job out. And we'll have to edit that out and tighten that up. But, you know, and then we're bringing in a dime. And so, you know, you're bringing in two more secondary guys. And it's not Shy, but it's Daniel and the freshman. And so I was a little bit surprised trying to figure that out. And, you know, and again, I'm, you know, this is not journalism by any stretch of the imagination, but theorizing in the stand, and then I had the opportunity to sort of test this theory, later in the evening. But my theory was, well, that's interesting because that's four safeties back there. And so are we intentionally doing something where we're going to run a dime, but, you know, not dissimilar to what you and I talked about last week, run a dime, walk someone up. And so are we playing a dime, but a, you know, call it a bigger dime or a safety dime? Are we doing that with any sort of intentionality? And so that was a question that I had an opportunity to ask. And the answer, you know, the answer was no. It wasn't that we were trying to get a bigger dime on the field, but it's just personnel groupings, and that we wanted to get a look at Maiden at the star position, and then sort of the ripple effect across. And I know that's a longer answer than you were going for, but that's really what we were doing. And so, you know, in past weeks, I might have theorized that we were trying to get a bigger dime package out there, but it was really more about getting Maiden in, and then the ripple that has across, across the rest of the position. Now, why? Why couldn't you do that and keep Shy in? And I think the answer to that was more along the lines of we wanted to get Daniel Wright some run as well. So I think it was just an interesting opportunity. We've talked about treating the first part of the season as an extended offseason. I think that's a little bit of what we saw on Saturday. I think next week, if you know, we head back into SEC play, we're going to see the dime that we saw against the start of the game against Duke.
Well, I will tell you there was a few camera angles pulled back from where you could see the Bama sideline, and on numerous occasions, you could see Josh Jobe with his helmet off, pretty good distance, 20 yards away from the defensive coaching staff. You could tell he had no plans to play. And I will tell you, I'm not going to pick on Josh Jobe because obviously he's done some good things. But he is a sophomore, and Jared Maiden and Shai Carter are seniors. And Shai Carter played a lot. And I'm going to tell you that I think you're going to I think Daniel Wright and Jordan Battle was just giving them some looks. But you didn't see Christian Harris much in this game, okay? You saw Shane Lee out there a lot. But there were numerous times where they were doing a two linebacker look. And I think this speaks to depth, okay? And so try not to give you a long answer back here, but Ben Davis and Chris Allen did not get any run really early, and they are the current backups behind Jennings and Terrell Lewis. But because it was hot out there, you didn't see Anfernee Jennings and Terrell Lewis on the field together very often at all. It was like, Anfernee's going to spell Terrell. Terrell's going to spell Anfernee. And Shane Lee's going to be out there. And then we're going to put Xavier McKinney in the box with Shane Lee because we trust Xavier McKinney more than we do the other true freshman, Christian Harris. Take nothing away from Christian Harris. But I think it's more to do with Shai Carter and Jared Maiden are seniors. They've been in the system for a while, right? And they're physical guys. And so I think we are masking our linebacker situation and manufacturing, you know, spelling these guys, and it's the best guys on the field. So Jennings played half the game and Terrell Lewis played half the game because, you know, we got to have them out there. You get what I'm saying, though? Like it seems like we're taking our veteran players to mask our depth problem at both the Jack, the Sam, and the inside linebacker positions.
Yeah, and I think that's a little bit of what we talked about last week, right? Is would we see more dime with maybe a walk-up linebacker to augment or manufacture depth at the linebacker position? And so the fact that we were mixing up personnel groupings and, oh, it just so happened that it's a four-safety dime as opposed to, you know, a two-safety dime, I think intentionally or not, it does bring some of that size. It does bring more of, you know, you think of a corner type versus a safety type, and a safety type is more like an outside linebacker potentially. And so I don't think that's necessarily a coincidence. And so I think we're going to continue to see that type of, you know, depth manufacture. There was a point in the game where we were in a dime position and the Aggies went and I think, you know, intentionally the matchup they were going for was, you know, Shane Lee in coverage. And admittedly, he is not going to be our stronger linebacker in coverage. I think that's going to be Christian Harris. And so, you know, sort of the theory, and it's not often that we have a theory that we have, you know, a real live opportunity to test. But the theory I had in the stands was, you know, Shane Lee knows the playbook better. And I'd read enough to sort of, you know, figure that out. I think he understands the playbook better than Christian Harris, but Christian Harris clearly is the more athletic. And again, not to sound toolish or anything, but I did have the opportunity to sort of vet that theory later in the evening. And that's exactly what, you know, the guy said is, you know, Shane Lee knows the playbook very, very well, but he doesn't have the athleticism as a Christian Harris. And, you know, you would think that you would want Christian Harris out in the dime. And so that's going to be something to watch, I think, as the season goes on as well. You know, mid-season, last quarter of the season, does Christian Harris know the playbook better than today, such that he's the guy out there in a dime position? And I think that helps sort of the rotation in depth as well, because then you don't have Shane Lee, you know, quote-unquote, playing the full game. They can manufacture a little bit of depth for one another. And then I'll say this, you mentioned Christopher Allen. I was surprised that he got run late. I figured that he would come in and spell earlier. But then what we don't know is the lingering effects physically or mentally from his knee injury last year in camp, and that's unknowable, and he's right at a year. And so it could be that he'll get, if indeed it's related to the injury, he'll get healthier and more sort of mentally comfortable playing on that knee as the season progresses. So I expect that we're going to see him come back into form, and he's going to have a good second half of the season. And that's just my prediction.
Well, Christian Harris, if he can progress, will spell Shane Lee. Because the fact that Shane Lee was playing all three downs as a true freshman, so he was in the game on first, second, and third down, and you didn't see Markel Benton, right? And you didn't see Jalen Moody, and you didn't see Davis, and you didn't see Allen. That's very telling to me, man. I mean, you got a true freshman who's being asked to be in their first, second, and third down right now. It's a, 100-degree football game. And to his credit, he was in there, and he was in there all three downs. And I think that's just very telling of the comfort level of even a Benton and a Moody, to not be in that situation. So if Christian Harris is the guy to step up and they feel more comfortable for him than Benton or Moody later in the season, then Shane Lee's going to be on third down like, great, Christian, come on in. I'm happy to sit this third and nine out. You know what I'm saying? And then very quickly on your four safety dime, I think Shy's a corner. I mean, Shy's a corner who's being asked to play safety. I think Shy came on last year and made some key plays. He made some key plays in that Georgia game that sealed that game. I'm happy for Shy. I think really what we're seeing is we're seeing more of a three. While he's playing safety, him and Diggs and Surtain were in there numerous times together. And then they were sticking, Daniel Wright and Maiden and sometimes Jordan Battle. They were in that two deep part of the dime, right? Where they were back there in center field where they could use their athleticism and just kind of back up the play. But I think Shy Carter's versatility right now is going to help this defense.
Yes, 100% agree. When we did start, and we did see Shy, rotate in and actually play a couple of positions, not only in the base nickel, but, certainly in the dime as well. When we started the game, Shy was out, as was Job. And so Job, clearly a corner, and Shy a corner type, with Surtain and Trayvon, that's four, that's a four corner dime, if you will. But with both of those guys out, we had Xavier, Battle, Wright, and Maiden, and I consider Maiden more of a safety type, and so in a bigger safety type. And so the fact that he was kind of in at the star, I thought was interesting. But there was another point in the game when, and for the life of me, I want to say it was Scooby Carter. Later in the game, Scooby Carter came in, and Shy was in, and Scooby was lining up, and he turned around to look at Shy, almost to confirm, am I in the right place? And Shy, sort of like, yeah, you're good. And so I thought it was interesting that Shy, didn't get the start, but came in and contributed and was showing not only his versatility, but certainly his knowledge of the system, because he was back in a position where he could help make sure people were lined up correctly. And you and I, talked about this years ago with Landon Collins, where he played, nearly every position. And by the end of the season, he was almost lined up at free safety so that he could ensure that folks were lined up correctly. And we saw a little bit of that on from Shy on Saturday. So I thought that was interesting. I really like, and then it sort of begs questions because we're seeing people move around and different starters. Hey, this is a great problem to have because we're not shuffling people in because no one can play. We're shuffling people in because we have more talented people than we have, positions to play, even in a dime. That, everyone gets excited about what the wide receivers because there's so many of them. We've got that problem, and, air quotes problem, with more names in more positions. It's a dime. It's six people, and we've got seven or eight or nine people that can start in a dime. That is amazing. That is a wonderful problem to have.
No, it is. And I will speak to Christian Harris very quickly because I know we got to get the game balls here. Christian Harris, You know how Bama on defense likes to, you know, they'll run 13, 14 guys on the field before the snap, and then two or three guys will run off? Christian Harris was in that collection numerous times, okay? Whereas, so he was in consideration, you know, to be in on a lot of plays. And so I wanted to mention that. And then also I just wanted to mention that, you know, the depth issue is also still an issue at the defensive line position, right? We are just very thankful that Raekwon Davis, you know, came back, because he wouldn't have been a first-round guy, but he would be playing on Sundays right now and would have made a 53-man roster. And so, you know, LeBryan Ray, you know, I thought played very well in the game. And for Raekwon Davis didn't come out very much at all. Mathis spelled him a little, but there was numerous times that Raekwon Davis was out there on all three downs, and so was LeBryan Ray. And so you know how we've had teams in the years past where we've asked a couple of these defensive linemen just to suck it up and be out there for all three downs? They were. And, you know, the credit to them is they were able to get these three and outs and get off the field so they could get a breather. But we need these guys behind them to step up as the season progresses, because we're going to be facing teams who are going to, you know, run 50 plays against us, and by the 50th play mark, these frontline guys are going to be sucking wind. So that I'm very thankful our schedule lines up like it does, where we really are going to, you know, be well into the season before we kind of test what this team is really going to do this year.
Yeah, and I wonder if there's not a little bit of lesson, and this sort of goes back into the Wayback Machine as well, but I wonder if there's not a little bit of lesson that Saban had. And, you know, when was it? You know, a couple of years ago, we played a very close game against LSU, and the starters who had starters on defense had mostly not played into the third, late into the third and fourth quarters. But against that LSU team, which we won that game, but they had to play, you know, 85 snaps, 84 snaps. And, you know, they had maybe played a max of 50 snaps up to that point in the season. And the next week on a hot Saturday afternoon, you know, the defense is just gassed, and we drop a game to Johnny Manziel and Texas A&M. So I wonder if there's not a little bit, and maybe I'm just manufacturing, you know, dots, but I wonder if there's not a little bit that says we need our starters to have full game fitness, right? Full game, that they need to go in with the mindset that they're playing the full game. Not that we're going to get the lead and take them out, but they need to be ready and prepared mentally and physically to play the full game. And so I wonder if we didn't see a little bit of that. I don't know, but that's something that certainly from the stands you and I both experienced. And I think it was real then. I don't know how much of that carries over, but certainly something Saban could be thinking about.
Oh, absolutely. Well, what else do you have here before we flip the field? Or what do you have? What else do you have on defense before we do mini sure. game balls?
Yeah, you know, I got two little things. You know, the youth on this team. You know, we talked about we're going to see a lot of the young guys come in and play. And so, and this is true on both sides of the ball, but, you know, the youth on the defense is really something to behold. I think this defense is going to get better every week. At the end of the season, I do think it's going to be just incredibly strong. There's going to be names that people don't know today that they'll know by the end of the season. And even, you know, projecting out the next season, this defense is going to be loaded. Steven Wynn just looks incredible just in, you know, his movement. In the uniform on the field, he looks like a starter. I think that he's going to continue to get better. You know, again, DJ Dale's already starting. You know, Christian Barrymore, probably a little more time in the weight room, but he's a big old fella, and he was chasing down the quarterback on a couple of pressures, almost had him a couple of times. You know, we talk about Lee and Harris, but King Makuta, number 30, true freshman, he really looks the part, and he's going to be even more so next year. I wouldn't be surprised if he takes over a Terrell, you know, Lewis or Anthony Jennings type position next year. I think he's really going to grow into the role. And then some of the secondary guys, we talked about Jordan Battle, DeMarco Hellams had a number of plays on Saturday. I think he looked really, really good. And then Scooby Carter, he's contributed in both games so far. He wears number 11. And sometimes you just have we've watched enough ball. Sometimes we just have a flashback when we see a player streak across the field. We see a number sort of streak across the field. And I just had a split second sort of moment where I said, what the hell's John Fulton doing out there? And, of course, it was Scooby Carter out there in coverage. But I got a kick out of that. But some of these youngsters, man, it's going to be fun to watch these guys grow up. It really is.
No, absolutely. Well, give me your mini game ball here, or I can start it off.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to go Trayvon Diggs. I know, you know, he's not a mini game ball guy, but I'm giving it to him for a very specific play. The long sort of pass and catch that New Mexico State had. Trayvon Diggs ran from across the field. He was the corner on the opposite side of the field that got the angle and made the tackle just shy of the goal line. The Aggies went on to score a couple plays later, and at that point, Trayvon was taken out. Looked like he had cramps on both legs. There was a trainer sort of lifting up both of his legs, stretching out both, and they could, you know, he couldn't even walk off the field. They had to, you know, sort of fireman carry him off the field. But it was clearly both, because there was a trainer working both of them, and I think I've read, you know, subsequently that it was indeed, you know, cramps. And so, hey, let's go get him on ice. Let's go get him hydrated. We don't need him for the rest of this game. So I think Trayvon's going to be okay. But I'm giving my mini game ball for just the effort and tenacity that he demonstrated. He easily could have just let that go. We've seen guys do that were closer to the play. But, you know, he may have ran 80 yards at an angle across the field to make the tackle, you know, at the five. And, you know, from where he was relative to where he started, no one would shame him if he just said, you know, that play's over. But he didn't. And I think that's certainly something that they can show again and again and again on film, that's what winning effort looks like. That is what winning effort looks like. And he can sort of chastise is maybe not the right word, but he can really call out the defensive front, the front eight, you know, after Trayvon's effort, you guys gave up the score. You guys owe Trayvon more than that. And I think there's sort of a coaching point that can go into that as well.
Absolutely. Well, I'm going to give mine in the spirit of the game ball on the defensive side of the ball, kind of like I did with Devonta's catch, which just kind of jumped out at me. Another play that jumped out at me is the freshman nose guard, you know, wearing the big number 94, seeing 94 at the nose guard position again is nice. But DJ Dale, you know, he showed the redshirt freshman starting center from Arizona how they grow them in Pinson, Alabama. And then also your Built by Bama comment plays into this. There was just one play in particular where DJ's lined up over the center, and as soon as the ball is snapped, he immediately has his hand on both of the guys' shoulder pads and just literally does this very quick swim move to go right by him and is in the backfield chasing the quarterback down, who's rolling to the right now, you know, fearing for his life. But he just made this move so quick. And the center checks in at 6'4", 300. And so, you know, here's one 300-pound guy doing this other 300-pound guy that quickly. And it was just impressive. And it was like, yep, that's why he's starting over, you know, some of his older backups at the nose guard position. And was just a fun football play to watch.
It was. And you know, so it's easy to sort of get caught up following the ball. And it takes a little bit of, and I say, I'm speaking to myself, it takes a little bit of eye discipline to focus on, you know, a lineman or an upfront guy. But you know, you do yourself a disservice if you're not, you know, getting some eyes on DJ Dale for, you know, for a series or for a handful of plays, because you're going to see that type of action. And what he sort of personifies is, you know, the Coach Saban recruiting machine. DJ Dale's a three-star player. And so you talk about, you know, Saban brings in all these five-star players, all these four-star players, and he does. But what he looks for, there's certain characteristics that he looks for at each position, and this the star next to it doesn't always matter, right? And you know, there's a little bit of overlap. You're looking for a certain level of athleticism. Well, those guys probably going to be rated, you know, certain number of stars, especially at skill positions. But he's also looking for certain measurables and certain characteristics, you know, at every position. And so you take a nose tackle type, you know, it's hard to get that guy a fifth star, a fourth and fifth star. But Saban saw something in this local kid that's a three star, and it translates on Saturdays as a even as a true freshman. And it translated early, right? Because he was getting reps with the ones early in camp. And it's exciting to see him translate that onto the field. So absolutely.
Well, and it's key, right? I mean, it's key, right? I mean, it's critical, right? For somebody to have stepped up like this. And so very quickly for the listeners, you know, we talk about all the coaching changes and all the crap he has to deal with defensive coordinators, offensive coordinators. And we talk about all the guys leaving early. Well, right now, okay, you know, they didn't win the recruiting battle nationwide last year. Ho-hum. But you still got Shane Lee and DJ Dale to come in. And right now, they are true freshmen filling in the most important positions in two of the three levels of the defense. They are both in the middle. Shane Lee is behind DJ Dale, and look where we would be right now without those two guys. It's just huge. So... All right, so talk to me about special teams real quick. The block in the back on Waddle's touchdown, I went back and watched it a couple of times. I do not think it was a block in the back. Obviously, I'm not doing home cooking here. Obviously, it wasn't a reviewable call. The guy was falling down, had lost his balance, and the Bama player, you know, went to like – try to block him, and so it looked from the refs that called the flag like it was blocking the back, but it wasn't. And I wish that guy, this is that football intellect, all he had to do was just pull his hands back like you see on kickoff returns, right, where the guy's like, I didn't block him in the back, my hands are up. He pulls his hands back, the guy falls on his own, and it's a touchdown. And so that's one I'd like to have back for Waddle.
Yeah, I agree. You know, we talked last week about, you know, we're going to break one of these kicks. And we were mostly talking about kickoffs, but, you know, it's true in the punting game as well. And so it was funny to see that happen. And at the time, you know, how demoralizing was that to New Mexico State? Because, you know, Henry Ruggs, you know, did what he did. And then, you know, really close after that, you know, Waddle did what he did. And you think, man, they're scoring points and they're not, they don't really even yet have their offense on the field. You know, it's going to be a long day, but yeah, it was frustrating to see, you know, that flag. You know, you wish sometimes that, you know, they had sort of the opportunity to look at the fullness of the play, not just the instinct of, I see an arm out and a guy going down, so I'm deducing that he was knocked over. And, you know, 18 out of 20 times, you know, 19 out of 20 times, that is what happened. But, you know, sometimes... You know, sometimes it wasn't, and that was the case there. Fortunately, it wasn't a play that sort of, you know, impacted the outcome of the game. But, you know, it's always fun to see Waddle, you know, break loose, and you'd like to see him get rewarded for it. What'd you make of?
Well, talk to me real quick about
Will Reichard. Yeah.
No, I was just going to ask you a question that you might be about to ask me. What did you think about DeLong getting the punting opportunity early? Versus the true freshman who obviously had done everything in week one.
Yeah, I don't think it's a surprise, right? You and I sort of questioned last week, why wouldn't Skyler get a little bit of run? And you know, we were only speculative in our answer. And I think, you know, midweek, you know, Saban said, you know, we're going to mix it up. We're going to give, you know, the other guy, you know, an opportunity. And you know, Skyler had a long kick of 44, and so you want that to be the average. But he had a long of 44 and an average of 41. You know, Will, and so he had three. You know, Will had, you know, what he had a singular kick, and it was 39. And so there's a little bit of kind of clustering in their performance. I think with as many as you know, all things being equal, if Saban still thinks Will is going to have the punting duties on a hot day when there's going to be a lot of kickoffs and a lot of PATs, potentially a lot of field goals. I think he was looking for something that he could take off, you know, Will's plate. And so maybe it was a little bit of punting. And I don't say that. That sounds derogatory towards Skyler. I think he wanted to give both guys an opportunity. I don't think either guy seized it. But, you know, if we can get averages up near 44 and 45 as opposed to longs, then that's where we need to be.
Oh, absolutely. Anything else for you on special teams?
Yeah, you know, I would say, you know, Will Reichard, some stuff you can't make up, right? And so last week he had a 48 and a 49, and he hit the left and right uprights. Saturday he had a 48 and a 49. You can't make that up, right? And he kicked both of them through. And so it was really good to see that. He really does have a strong leg. I mean, there's almost a different sound when he boots the ball. And I tell you, the dangerous position to sit at a Bama game these days are on that front second row at the end of the end zone, because I think he kicked, you know, 9 out of 11, 9 out of 12, 8 out of 11, whatever it was, out of the end zone. And he's hitting not just barely out of the end zone, but well out of the end zone. And somebody in that front row, if they're not paying attention, they're going to get Marsha Brady, because that ball, he's going to get it up into the stands. And that's going to be something to see, because that's a healthy-sized kick right there.
No, that's awesome, man. Well, talk to me about South Carolina game. Obviously, you know, we're venturing to Columbia. We haven't done this in a while. They obviously, you know, lost to North Carolina, who then turned around and beat Miami. North Carolina did. You know, what are you looking for in this Alabama-South Carolina game?
Yeah, you know what, and I'll say a little bit tongue-in-cheek, because we, you know, truly we never root for injury. But the fact that, you know, Jake Bentley, senior quarterback, is not going to play Saturday, you know, in the mystique of this game, is probably a good thing. The last two times that Alabama traveled to Columbia, and this goes back a little ways, but the last two times Alabama made that trek, we faced a senior quarterback and dropped the game. And it was a senior quarterback that was just, you know, good enough to sort of have a name brand, like a Jake Bentley, but, you know, not a superstar. And so, was it Chris Petty? This is years ago. Lou Holtz was the coach, and Fran was ours. And then, you know, in 2010, so we don't go there very often, but right. When we do, we struggle with senior quarterbacks. And, you know, Stephen Garcia, you know, back
had the game of his life. So yeah.
Had the game of his life. And ironically, we started that season against Duke, blowing out Duke. And so there's a little bit of, hey, I'm enough of these parallels. I don't need to see any more of these parallels. And so, you know, send Jake Bentley on a cruise or something. I don't want him hurt, but if he doesn't start the game, then I have a preference for that. I think they did, you know, really try to, you know, and it's really about trying to get reps and manufacture confidence. But gosh, did they really run up the score? I want to say it was
Charleston Southern.
I want to say it was Georgia Southern, yeah.
Yeah, Charleston Southern, they beat them 72-10. Yeah.
Yeah, Charleston Southern. That's where I was going. And so, yeah, and it's a little bit of that, you know, South Carolina, you know, it's a local sort of competitive team in that way. And so they want to do that. It's a little bit of, we got to manufacture some confidence here because we don't, you know, because we lost it after losing to North Carolina the way they did. And, you know, with Alabama coming to town and starting a freshman quarterback, they got to have some confidence somewhere. It's going to be a long day. And so I think that's kind of what's going to happen. I look at this as, you know, I think Alabama's as the talent and you know, certainly the depth. And I think, you know, we got them sort of at the coaching position too. I think it's maybe a 41-14 type game. But I wouldn't be surprised if it's, you know, 17-7 at half or something like that. But, I think Alabama wins. I think it's, you know, it's convincing. It's a comfortable sort of SEC road game win, but you know, it's not going to be 50 or 60 like we've seen the first 2 weeks.
Yeah, I was calling something like a 44-7. I think they're, you know, a touchdown's going to come from somewhere for South Carolina, but obviously, you know, what you were referring to with the quarterback is huge for Alabama right now, right? To not have to face him for the reasons you mentioned. And it'll be you know, it'll be a, the good news is they've already played in Atlanta. They've already done the road thing. You know, the, you know, we started 14 true freshmen against Duke, which just goes to speak of, you know, all these players leaving when they do. And so, I'm excited that we had that opportunity in Atlanta, had these, you know, young guys able to get that under their belt. So now, you know, opening in the season, you know, in a hot game at 3:30 in South Carolina, the SEC, I think these guys are going to be up for it. And I think they're going to try to put some points on them early.
And that's no small thing, right? And it's something that we don't talk about a whole lot, but it's not a small thing for, you know, the true freshmen, especially the true freshmen. Some of them have never flown on an airplane. And so to, you know, to get that trip, I don't know if we bus to Atlanta, but we're certainly, I think, going to fly to South Carolina. And so to get some of the travel out of the way, you know, the hotel and the buses and the meeting rooms and everything is different and it's a first time experience. And so you get some of that out of your system, you know, against Duke and get it out of your system early. I think that's good. And I think that, you know, I don't think that contributes necessarily to the freshman playing better, but if it helps them to sort of focus on the game, that's great. And then, you know, look, South Carolina's, I mean, we're predicting a big scores. It's going to be a physical game, you know, at least early. I think we both think Alabama's the better team, and I don't think that's any surprise. I think Vegas has it, you know, a 3-touchdown game, a 21-point game. So we're probably, you know, betting the over on that if we were. But, you know, it's no small thing that they get sort of those – just all the new stuff, just get it out of the way as early as you can. I think there's value to that, and certainly we experience that with this being our second road game.
Oh, there's going to be a couple of big plays that's going to help this 44-point total, because obviously, you know, he's not going to want to embarrass Will Muschamp. And so if he can walk away and win this game 31-3 or 31-7, he'll be just fine with that.
Yep, I agree.
Anything else you've got for the listeners?
You know, you and I talked before the game, and there were a couple things that I might sort of layer in at future times. I'm going to throw just a big kind of curve out there. If our listeners have been watching ABC, especially football on ABC, there has been sort of a mad ad campaign for a new show called Stumptown. And I just want to endorse that show. The guy, Stumptown is a new show on ABC, and it's based on a comic book series. I went to high school, one of the most creative people that I know. I went to high school with one of the co-producers, one of the co-sort of writers on the comic book. And so that has been optioned for a TV show, and it's a TV show starting this fall on ABC. So the guy who sort of originated the Stumptown cartoon, I went to high school with him. And so I just say, hey, go support him and support his show. Honestly, I don't know if it's going to be any good, but I hope it's a success for the sake of Matt Southworth. You can look him up. And so I'm kind of excited, you know, someone you know is having that kind of success opportunity. So I just want to share the word on this little platform that I have. Go support the show for the sake of supporting my buddy Matt.
That's awesome, man. That means you know famous people. I'm honored just to be doing these freaking podcasts with you, man.
That's right.
That's what I get for letting you close out the show every week. And see, that's what got you this damn notoriety. All that, you know, this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. See, I got mine out now before you did yours. But that's right. What happened, that's, man. Right. I just let you get too big of a star too early. It's all good, though, man.
I am not a big star.
Dude, you are a star.
I felt
in the
like
making,
one Saturday
man.
Night. I'll tell you that because so now there's another little story that I'll tell. When Tommy and I were students, I'm gonna tell the Krispy Kreme story. When Tommy and I were students, we were doing
just tell a portion of the Krispy Kreme story, please. You don't have to do the whole Krispy Kreme story. Just do a part of it.
Well, I don't know which part to leave out. So at any rate, we end up at Krispy Kreme after, you know, studying well into the evening. I don't know what time it is. It's like 2:30 in the morning, 3:00 in the morning. And these cars start showing up and these sorority girls start getting out of the car. And within like 2 minutes, there's like 30 or 40 sorority girls all like you know, to the nines. You know, apparently a crush party or something had let out, and they all went to Krispy Kreme at, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning. And Tommy and I just kind of looked at each other and said, "Well, I don't know. Maybe we died in a car wreck on the way to Krispy Kreme, because holy cow." And so I had a similar experience Saturday night, like a middle-aged version of that, a middle-aged sports fan version of that. And so so I'm hanging out at this sort of watering hole after the game, and a guy from the football department comes and sits down. And so I'll kind of leave it at that. But some interesting things that he and I talked about. And until he leaves, and I'm continuing to watch the LSU-Texas game, and, you know, not 5 minutes later, guy comes and sits down, and, you know, two guys at the bar, we start talking football and talking menu and you know, looking at the game on the TV. And it turns out it's Chris Jans, who's the basketball coach at New Mexico State. And so we're sitting there talking a little bit of basketball, not my sport. I don't know a whole lot about it, but a little bit of basketball, a little bit of football. And then, you know, over my shoulder, sitting at one of the tables, having dinner with his family is, you know, Matt Stinchcomb, like you said, the SEC guy. And I'm sitting there like, this is crazy. No one's going to believe me that this is happening. But that was a pretty neat experience Saturday night. So next time you got to be there, man.
Absolutely, man. But you were getting those good vibes because you had gone and supported the team and done a better job of me of sitting in the 100-degree heat for that football game. And so you were getting rewarded for your dedication to the team on Saturday. So
I'll absolutely take it.
All right, man. We'll send us out.
Send us out. Hey, this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Thanks for listening, and roll tide.
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a roll tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, coach?
Aye.
Of course. Roll Tide.